You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week and review them. Why not do it? Why not for a change?
Why not share your opinion on the internet? You know what I mean?
Exactly. And just to mention up front, if you'd like to share your opinion with us, a great place to do that is patreon.com/comicbookclub, where you can get ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do. But let's kick off The Stack with Superman Unlimited, number one from DC Comics.
It's Unlimited Superman.
There's all the Superman you can eat in this comic book, written by Dan Slott, art by Raphael Albuquerque.
The now,
this
is,
we got a little taste of this, literally. Not literally.
We ate some of it?
I'm clearly very hungry is what's going on here.
Yeah.
The first 10 pages of this book were in the free Comic Book Day special that was released back at the beginning
of the
month.
Which was delicious.
Oh, my God. I ate so many of those. They were like, please,
it was
sir.
It's free. How can you stop?
You know what this, I mean? You cannot do that. You cannot do that, sir. Anyway, this goes beyond that. Obviously, gives us more of a story. But the cliffhanger at the end of the free Comic Book Day thing, which is included here, is Superman goes to stop an asteroid, but it turns out to be an enormous chunk of kryptonite. We find out a lot more about what's going on with that and how that changes the state of the Superman universe. And in fact, the entire DC universe here in this ish. But Pete, what'd you think about this? What'd you think about Dan Slott's take on the Man of Steel?
Well, it's great to see the Slott doing stuff. He's a great writer, and it's great to see the Kirky on this. I love this team. Kirky, one of my favorite artists of all time. I think this was a fun. I was enjoying this until the kind of reveal at the end.
Really?
And now I'm like, well, I'm going to tune in next time. But I'm a little harumphed by it.
Interesting. And I'll just put a general blanket spoiler warning up top here for all of the books that we talk about today. But I will say I really liked the 10 pages from Free Comic Book Day. This felt like very much a mission statement that Dan Slott was putting out there in terms of here's how I feel about Superman. Here's how he's going to be. It felt very iconic. And then a lot of this book past this point was kind of just a reiteration, a rehashing of super events in Superman's entire history up until now, some of which I'm sure part of the reason is they're going to play into this book. And in fact, some of them already start to in certain ways by the end of the issue, as you're hinting at here, Pete. But I don't know. I felt like we already got that at the beginning. And once we hit the kryptonite asteroid thing, I wanted more of a take. And I did like the end because it provided me more of Dan Slott making his mark on Superman, taking those big swings we know he can from Marvel. And I, like you, I am very curious to see what happens next after the reveal at the end there. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I needed the greatest hits of Superman as told by Dan Slott, which the majority of this issue felt like.
Yeah, I hear that. Can we spoil the ending and talk about it, or do you want to do that later?
Yeah, let's talk about it. No, we gave a spoiler warning. Go ahead.
Okay. So Superman is gold now.
Yes. So what happens is that the kryptonite asteroid is not just littered kryptonite all over the Earth and led to a new Emerald City on Earth. Shout out to Wicked, which I know Pete saw and loved this past week. But also, it somehow has turned Superman gold. And I'm curious why you don't like that. Why were you turned off by that?
Well, I just think it's I don't want to. I think Dan Slott's a hilarious person and an amazing writer, and I don't want to insult him. But it's like, oh man, he battled this giant thing of kryptonite, and now he's gold. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what? Why? How is this? Why is this cool? And what does that do? And are you? I don't know. I'm not. I'm like, cool. Now Superman is gold. I don't know how to be excited about that.
That's what I thought. I think that's the reaction you're supposed to take away from the end. There is like, huh? What does that mean? What does it mean that Superman's gold? What are his abilities? You're in the same position he's in because everybody else already knows this happened to him. The whole Superman family, the Justice League, etc. It's a surprise to Superman, which we're going to find out about in the next issue.
And to me, like gold finger type of thing, where everything he touches turns to gold.
We'll find out. But to me, it seems like a riff on the classic Superman blue, Superman red thing, but now we're getting gold and we'll see what it means. I don't know.
To me, it was like an iPhone thing where it was like, first we got Superman blue, then we got red, then we got Rose gold. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's ultimately, it's whatever Dan Slott does with it. To me, he'll do something interesting with it. I'm never a huge fan of, let's give Superman different powers, but if the story works, it works. So this is a big question mark until the second issue. But like I said, like that was the sort of Dan Slott putting his mark thing that I wanted out of the rest of the issue. So I'm psyched for issue number two.
Personally. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things you can do with Superman, and we've seen a ton, right? So like in Spider-Man, he did like Spider-Boy. And at first I was like, what are we doing? But that ended up being kind of cool later on. You know what I mean? But at first I was kind of like,
well, I mean, I think the direct one-to-one that everybody's going to call out is, which you didn't like, was Superior Spider-Man, where Doc Ock took him over. But that, I would argue, was exactly what I'm saying. It was, he always, Dan Slott, plans intricately very far in advance. He has his big board. He works it all out. And that was not being like, we're going to just do this for shock value. It was, this is a story that we're overarching telling about Peter Parker at the end of the day. So as long as
But you don't think like big gold got to him and, you know, it's
Do you think he's like investing in crypto or something?
Yeah.
Like
somewhere it's like, oh man, I have this gold. I got to move it. How can I
scream?
You know.
actually, now that's what I think this is. The unlimited is, I have an unlimited amount of gold.
I got to move it. Yeah, I got to figure out how to do that.
How am I going to do that? Yeah. I got all this crypto I'm into now. Anyway, why don't we move on to another big number one, which has another game-changing ending
here. Oh, my God.
Spider-Man and Wolverine, number one from Marvel, written by Mark Guggenheim, art by Kare Andrews. And I'll tell you what. Most of this issue, and even getting into here, I was not expecting the big swing they were going to take by the end here as a game-changing twist on the history of both of these characters. I guess we'll see whether it is true or not. But the up until this game-changing twist, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a second, this gives off very pleasant 90s vibes, like the structure that Mark Guggenheim is going here. I know it's not 90s, but it feels very Jeff Loeb, Superman, Batman, down to the dueling narration type thing. Kare Andrews totally leading into his 90s, 2000s roots here in terms of the art. Everybody is like posing all the time and jumping into the air, Rob Liefeld style. And I didn't mind it at all. It was very fun. And you get to that end bit where you're like, oh no, what are we doing? Uh-oh. So
yeah, I was having a blast up until that point. I was really like, this reminds me of the Marvel versus Capcom kind of Street Fighter type game, you know, with this cover. Very badass. And just has this kind of like great, kind of like, okay, these two thrown together. And then you get to the reveal, and I was just like, oh, my God, just how do I feel about it? I don't know. You're kind of dazed by the weight of, like, what does this mean?
Just specifically talk about it. Essentially, what's revealed here is that Wolverine may have, back in the day, killed Peter Parker's parents.
Yeah.
Probably working for the government, Weapon X.
They set it up early because Wolverine just kind of has this moment of, like, oh man, I've done a lot of shitty things in my life. You know, and you're just like, okay, why is it bringing that up?
That's what I wanted to point to, is I think the Googs did a really nice job of setting up the reveal in this issue, both from the Wolverine side and also Spider-Man joking, not joking, with Shay, his sort of girlfriend, about, like, Well, but they go on sort of a date here.
And nope, he was late to the date. You couldn't even call that a date.
Hold on. Don't get caught in the weeds here. He makes a reference to his parents being spies, which is an actual part of continuity, and they died in a plane crash and all of these things that people are like, that's crazy. Why did they add that to Spider-Man's origin? But bring that up at the beginning here, it pays off by the end in a really nice way. The thing that held me up a little bit, and this is a little external, is it's the same sort of twist as Bucky killing Iron Man's parents in Civil War.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, like, hampers it a little bit.
We've seen it. Yeah, we've seen it a little bit.
But I will say, Cary Andrews draws the heck out of that sequence. Like, there's sort of this shadowy Logan looking at the camera all in the bottom of the corner, and you're like, wait, that kid, you're not going for that. You're actually doing this.
And then I'm like, no.
Well, and I appreciate the hubris in the third rail touching of going back to that storyline at all. I think there's probably going to be more twists to come, like doctored footage or something like that, but maybe not. I don't know. I guess we'll see.
And then the rage that Spider-Man shows at Wolverine is just, oh my God.
Yeah. So interesting first issue. Why don't we move to
Hell
the last?
Of a first issue.
Let's move to a last issue with Archie is Mr. Justice, number 4 from Archie Comics, written by Blake Howard, art by Federico Sabatini. This has been a series of prestige one-shots, taking the idea of Archie Comics characters as superheroes seriously. Here we're turning to Reggie's perspective, where he is the villain, Kid Wicked.
Yeah.
And we show the event that we have had teased over the past couple of issues of our Archie as Mr. Justice dying. This was really poignant and emotional, I thought.
Yeah,
it was great.
Surprised. This Fangs versus Archie was great. Really well set up and executed. I love the art, all the action. This was a hell of an issue, man.
Yeah.
I was very moved by this. A lot goes down in this. With high drama. You got crying fathers, you know, just, oh, man, tears, emotions, superpowers. This is intense. Just great art.
Yeah, and I also really just like how this project worked out as essentially a series of one-shots that still told a serialized story over the course of it. If you're interested in Reggie and you want to pick up the last issue, you could pick this up and get a complete story in and of itself. Nothing against the other ones. I really think this was the best of the bunch, so it ended very strong.
Yeah, nothing good. Like a strong ending.
Yeah, like a strong ending. It was a good book. All right, Absolute Flash, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Nick Robles. We, I believe, are kind of getting the end of the first arc here, or at least the end of the beginning of Wally West's origin story. I want to talk about something, Pete, with you, because we got a take on Grodd at the end of the last issue as a tiny little green monkey with an exposed brain.
Yep.
And this issue is all about this tiny little psychic Grodd and Wally West becoming friends. I thought it was great, and I love the idea of a kid Flash and his pet psychic monkey running across the country trying to escape supervillains who are kind of superheroes. But Pete, were you so upset about Grodd at the end of the last issue that you held on to it through this issue? Is it the literal monkey on your back?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of, I mean, the like release the monkey was a little, I don't know. It's not, this didn't hit me right.
This is not a trap. I'm legitimately curious because I know how put off you were by the end of the last issue.
Yeah, this is weird. And the monkey, I'm fearful for this guy who thinks he's got a little monkey friend because it's Grodd, and that's kind of dangerous. So it's hard for me to enjoy these moments that they're having as a monkey and a buddy. So it's this, you know, it's like a buddy cop when the buddy is an actual murderer. So it's not as enjoyable, but the art's fantastic.
Yeah, it would be like a Lethal Weapon situation if one of them was like an anti-Semitic racist. That would be very uncomfortable.
Are you talking about racist-ass Mel Gibson's?
Oh, yes. Oh, that's who I'm talking about, Pete. Yeah, that's what was my joke.
Racist-ass Mel Gibson's.
To talk about the comic itself, though, I think that's what they're potentially getting towards. Like, they're certainly playing with your expectations completely about Grodd here. And last issue, we found out that Wally could either be the greatest hero the world ever knew or the greatest villain the world ever knew.
I mean, what a choice.
Not a choice. And we'll see how Grodd ties into that. But this is my favorite issue so far. This really started to come together, and I'm looking forward to seeing.
So when he was like, release the monkey, you were like, yes, that's awesome.
Well, that was last issue. This issue, the monkey was released.
Panel where they say release the monkey.
That's great. And I like all the rogues, too. I think they're really fun as they're tracking him down. I wish there was more story to each issue. They feel like little blips, little pieces. But it's a beautiful looking book.
Blip, that was a monkey, too, right?
Yeah, that's probably why I said that. All right, why don't we move on to talk about The Thing, number one from Marvel, written by Tony Fleece, art by Justin Mason. This is a story from back in the day of The Thing getting brought back to Yancey Street to investigate a mystery that might blow out into him fighting the entire Marvel Universe. Pete, I know you were psyched about this, so take it away.
Tony Fleece and Fleece. Yeah, this is a blast. This is a hell of a first issue. Really fun, great start. I'm all in. More of this, please. I love this kind of Ben Grimm focused story. You know, you get a little bit of the other Fantastic Four, but this is really a story about Ben, which I'm excited about. I just think tons of action in this. I'm all in. This is a great, great first issue.
I really like this as well. There's some very interesting twists and turns as he encounters other members of the Marvel Universe. We have him clash with Melvin Potter, the Wizard, I think. I always forget that guy's name. And there's teases of other characters around the periphery as well. But it's also surprisingly a more morose thing than I'm used to, which I thought was interesting.
Like, cool take.
Yeah, normally we get a thing who's like, whatever, I'm just a regular guy on the street. But here he's teamed up with his childhood bully and he's exhausted because he's been on nonstop Fantastic Four missions. So it leads to a thing that's like not taking a lot of shit throughout this book. And it fits. I think Tony does a great job of writing and really narrowing his character, but it is a very different take than we're used to. And it's interesting.
Yeah, it's cool.
And you get great to see cover. Him in the hat and trench coat as well. Great disguise.
Oh, yeah.
I would never know that was the thing if I saw him on the street.
I mean, it's a hat and trench coat. What's it see?
Look. Be like, what are you, sir? I will give you a ticket to an R-rated movie if you like. You were definitely not three kids. Robo-Wolf, number one.
Holy from Dark 80s. Horse.
from Dark Horse Comics by Jake Smith. This is about a cyborg wolf shooting up the neighborhood and fighting people. It is
in a van. Don't forget the van part.
Boy, this is a lot. This book's a lot. This is like if you walked up to somebody doing graffiti in the 80s while they were on a skateboard, and then they took the spray paint and they sprayed it straight up your nose, and you're like, oh, yeah, let's go. Let's make a
Huff
comic.
It's like Huff in the 80s, man.
It's like Huff in the 80s. That's a more concise way of saying it.
Yep.
Which definitely at the end, I was like, oh, my God, my eyeballs hurt looking at this comic book. Which is not necessarily an insult. It's just like,
it's bright. Packed. It's very 80s. There's layers to everything that's happening. You can kind of like feel the kind of grittiness at times. But yeah, this is just a great time and a nice homage to the 80s action and fun that was kind of happening in television and movies at that time. And it's a kind of a fun combo of like Teen Wolf and RoboCop and all those fun skater movies and stuff like that from the 80s. So, yeah, this is just a kind of fun mashup of all the things that we love. And, yeah, and you even got a guy who's like, you know, got a skull for a face. And, yeah, it's just great stuff. It's like, yeah, somebody's bottom of the skateboard come to life.
I thought of a better metaphor for it. It is like that moment when you walk into the arcade from outside and like you open up the doors and suddenly it's like every machine is going at the same time. There's neon lights. You're like, what? I need a second to just okay, I'm going to focus on Double Dragon over there. Yeah. Go into Double Dragon and then I'll figure this all out.
Double Dragon is my safe place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Batman, Superman, World.
But you would agree, it's great though.
It was too much for me. It was a little too much overpacked. 80s. It was not even that. Like just as a comic book, I felt like the pages were too packed with information. There were too much going on. I wish it had pulled back like 15% or something like that. But it is distilled creation, and I can't fault that. Yeah. Batman Superman World's Finest, number 39 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Clayton Henry. This is continuing the We Are Yesterday crossover. What is going on here? What is going on in this comic? I really like this team. Mm-hmm. We talked about how with the previous part, I won't speak for anybody else, but I will say I find the plot of this enormously confusing, too many things going on. And in this issue, after the Legion of Doom went to the future so they could conquer the past,
right?
Now there's two sets of Superman, Batman, and Nightwing, and Superman, Batman, and Robin that are mixed up and traveling through different time periods as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why that's hard to... Once you mess with the timeline, you get characters bleeding all the way through. You know what I mean?
So there's some good seeds in here.
That's Pete. What I'm trying to get at, Alex, is, yeah, if you can turn off your brain for a second, there's some beautiful moments in here. The Superman realizing he has a family was just so touching. Mm-hmm. The Alfred being alive scene, the two Robins was fun. I was having, as a fan, I was like, yes, I know this doesn't make sense. But for them to kind of be able to see Alfred again, I was just emotional, man.
So I agree with you that it was emotional. And this is the Batman for the future who knows Alfred is dead. Seeing Alfred again and also Nightwing gives him a hug and everything. And I was like, oh, this is very emotional. The one thing that didn't track to me was Alfred in that scene. Alfred being like coming down to the Batcave and be like, good day, Master Bruce. You seem to be in entirely different costumes. And acting very weird about me. Nothing to see here. Back upstairs to the batter. That's not Alfred. Alfred immediately would be like, what's going on here? Did you travel through time? What's happening? You don't need to tell me about that. Like, there was no... Literally, the action was Alfred comes down the stairs. Everybody hugs him and cries over him. And he's like, goodbye. And I don't know. That didn't work for me. But
and he didn't give anybody soup. You know what I mean?
And there's no bouillabaisse or anything.
Yeah, come on. I mean,
no finger sandwiches? Yeah. What a rude. Fire that butler.
Hey, watch your mouth.
Plot-wise, though, how are you feeling about that, Pete? You get what's going on, right?
No, don't.
No, not at all. Why is this so complicated? I don't understand why this is so complicated. This should just be the Legion of Doom versus the Justice League, and I'm not sure why it's so complicated.
Because the multiverse, that's why, I guess.
I guess so. The Vision and Scarlet Witch, number one from Marvel, written by Steve Orlando, art by Lorenzo Tomeda. Speaking of complicated, if you haven't been reading Steve Orlando's ongoing series and mini-series of The Scarlet Witch, this just picks right up and keeps on. It is great. But I was very surprised for a first issue. This was like, oh, yeah, you guys know all the stuff about the doors and, like, everything that's going on with the Scarlet Witch and all this.
You've been reading all my stuff, right? Because
yeah, so we're just going to keep going here.
Yeah.
But despite all that, the moments with Vision and Scarlet Witch in here, two people who are no longer together talking, like very similar to the last book.
The hand thing got me, dude.
They almost touch hands way that's framed. Yes. Great tension in that scene. Great romantic tension throughout of two characters who are very connected. And that's something that I do think really worked about this issue for me is in the middle of all this stuff where, like, we've been popping in and out of these series where I was like, I don't get all of this, but I do get this relationship, and it is nailing that part of it.
Yeah, it's also like that last kind of panel where it was like, what did you do to me? I was like, what is happening? Like, how is DC and Marvel both having this weird kind of color change at the end of their comics, being like, what have you done to me?
Oh, yes. Vision, I mean, this is ruined on the cover, but Vision becomes white at the end of the comic book.
Yeah.
That is funny. I hadn't actually put those both together. But that kind of worked for me because, again, that was based on the emotion of Scarlet Witch. There's a shocking moment where Vision seemingly gets killed, and Scarlet Witch is like, no, that is not going to happen. I'm not going to let that happen, and here's what I'm going to do. And again, like, it's really based in that emotion there, and I think that worked very nicely.
Yeah, it reminded me of when Gandalf went from Gandalf the Gray to Gandalf the White.
He also changed colors, like Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sleep, number one.
Sleep!
Oh, I wish.
Sweet sleep.
I read this title, and I was like, sounds great.
I love some.
Don't need to open the book. Yes, please. Don't need to read it. Don't care what's inside.
Love it.
This is by Xander Cannon, and this is a very weird book that's definitely slow playing its premise. It follows a guy who is just kind of living his life, going to church,
but
meeting the people in his neighborhood.
Is he?
There are some animal attacks in his neighborhood, and there's an indication that he may be more tied to it than we think.
He's a werewolf.
He is probably a werewolf or some sort of such thing.
What about the twist of the homeless lady that he ran into in the street?
Yeah, there's a bunch of weird demonic stuff going on throughout. The real draw of this book, I think, is the art style, which is mostly black and white with occasional red bits.
His glasses
are red, and there's some splashes of red and these weird like spell pentagram type things as well. It's a really cool looking book.
It is. It is a really artistic book. But what about the rock star guy who just happens to show up out of nowhere? It could be him, too.
Well, so here's what I'd say about the structure of it is Cannon talks a little bit about slow playing the premise in the back matter in this book. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can do that with a single issue. Like, this would... I'm imagining this will probably work really nicely when collected in the trade as a graphic novel because it's sort of this slow, bubbling, black hole-style weird terror that's throughout the town. Yes.
Here's the thing, though. If it's anybody but the main character, it's a letdown because we've ridden with this main character in the hopes that he is the wolf. And if he's not, it's like, boo, why are we fucking hanging with this guy with the red glasses?
In a graphic novel, because you know there's more to come. With the single issue here, we got to get some sort of reveal every issue, and there's not quite enough in this first issue here. That's all.
Well, I think they did a fun job of it being like, it could be anybody, but I'm still like, yeah, but it's our guy.
Yeah,
but it's our guy with the sheep parts in front of him when he woke up. You know what I mean? Because that's like,
how often does that happen to you? Big indicator. Well, I mean, Pete, you're an expert on this. You're constantly waking up with sheep parts in front of you.
Oh, man.
What's the most frequent part, would you say? The legs or like the torso?
Yeah, it's usually a leg. It's usually a leg.
You're a leg man.
Yeah.
Sheep legs, to be clear.
Sheep legs.
Wonder Woman, number 21 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Gillian March. This is the second part of a two-part arc where Batman and Wonder Woman are investigating a murder mystery in Olympus. Last issue, Batman was knocked down. He got up again. He got up again. You're never going to keep him down. Wonder Woman has to investigate the mystery solo, and of course she figures it out. Pete, I know you were pretty psyched about this one, so take it away.
Yeah, this was such a great issue. A lot goes down in this issue, which is great. Wonder Woman solves the kind of mystery here. And, you know, so I... You know, there is this kind of like, I also like Wonder Woman and Batman as a couple, right? So there was part of me that was like really kind of shipping that. But what they did in this issue was just so awesome and so well done. Just them being friends, you know, just being great friends for each other. It's also very powerful and moving. You know what I mean? They don't have to date. They don't have to. I just think that it's just cool to see them kind of looking out and caring for each other. So I think this is such a cool move and well done. And, yeah, I was just super impressed with this. We got that layered in with all the kind of action and stuff of Wonder Woman kind of solving this.
You know, it's funny you have that reaction because I had it too, and I think part of it is how Gillian March draws people so sexy all of the time. It's actually very, like, toned down quite a bit in this issue, which I thought was interesting. It's a very different art style for him. Maybe it's because of the way the Tom King script stuff, I don't know. But there's definitely a romantic tension that I felt too between them. But, like you said, that's not what you get at the end, and it actually ties back to the main thing that King has been hitting over and over in his run, that Diana and Steve Trevor are meant to be together.
Or were the end game,
Yeah, and that was a really nice emotional punch towards the end there. I really like that beautiful. Quite a bit. So, yes, good issue, good two-issue.
Great issue.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Incredible Hulk, number 25 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Nick Klein. In this issue, Hulk is taking on Thor, who wants to take down Hulk's companion, who is a skinwalker, leading to a bunch of big battles. I thought this was a great issue that really plays to Philip's strengths in terms of he loves writing these big, epic, mythic stories, and he writes it as a lost forgetting the word, not ode, but whatever it is, like a lost tale, a lost epic yarn of Thor in terms of this battle, which I thought was very neat. Plus, Nick Klein always just draws great monster battles throughout.
Yeah, and let's just take a moment to acknowledge what a cool cover this is. I think
anything you want to mention about the cover in particular that's cool about it?
Yeah, it's badass. You know what I mean? It's just like
that doesn't describe it.
Epic. Better. You know what I mean? Epic would be a good word to describe it.
Yeah, rectangular. It's a rectangle.
Yeah, it's a box that says Hulk on it. You know, and I just think it's
it's not in a box.
Well, it's in a square.
If you're going to describe it, then like literally the only thing you actually said about the cover was wrong.
That's me, man. Always wrong.
Yep. Great.
But I do think that this is just an awesome issue. Kind of gets to the core of what I love about Hulk. Hulk is just like, leave me the fuck alone, man. I'm not fucking with you. Don't fuck with me. He's like, yeah, so I'm hanging with the skinwalker, but she's cool. Don't worry about it. Yeah, she's disguised as an adorable girl, and maybe she's a monster on the inside, but we're cool. And like, you know, back up off of me and what we're doing. So I love this. I thought this was a cool premise. And it's nice to see Thor get taken down a peg every once in a while. You know what I mean?
I couldn't agree more. Let's talk about The Killer, Affairs of the State 2, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Matz, art by Luke Jackamon. As the title, this is from Boom Studios, excuse me. As the title implies, this is a sequel to The Killer, which I think at this point people probably know better as a movie with Michael Fassbender from David Fincher than they do as a comic, though it actually came from there originally. And I gotta say, it's really nice to revisit this world again, particularly after the movie, because I was like, oh, right, this is very weird. You have a hired killer in this issue who is maybe accidentally sucked into breaking up a child trafficking ring is, I think, what's happening here. It's not 100% clear at this point what's going on, but it's very... The action storytelling is, like, so precise from Jackamon. And meanwhile, it's juxtaposed with this narration where the killer is just, like, literally talking about the state of the world or whatever is coming to his mind. And so it just makes this fascinating read.
Yeah, I love the combination of art and kind of story and action in this. It's such a cool tone that I didn't... Like, when I love this comic, so when I was excited about the movie, I feel like the movie missed the feeling that I get when I read this comic a little bit. And I do love the kind of the way they sit in this, these moments. And because of, like, there's a lot of art and then few words, it kind of sets this kind of interesting kind of tone and vibe that I really appreciate. And it was like, oh, man, I miss this world. It's great to be back here again. And yeah, just, oh my God, heartbreaking with these kids. And then you hope, you know, everything's going to be all right. But man, just very cool to be back in this world. Such a great issue. Yeah, I really love this. The art and the writing are just such a great combination. And you could see why someone would want to try to make a movie out of this and kind of capture it.
Yeah, but to the point that you're making, Pete, it belongs in comics, and the panel structure throughout the, like I was saying, the juxtaposition of the narration and the images, it's very different on film than it is in comics. Yeah. So highly recommend picking this up. Another only in comics, DCX Sonic the Hedgehog, same level too. DCX Sonic the Hedgehog number 3 from DC Comics, written by Ian Flynn, art by Adam Bryce Thomas. The last issue of this, Team Sonic was sent back to the DC universe while the Justice League seemed to be lost. So what do? They become the Justice League this issue.
Yeah.
What fun. I had a fun time. I'm really enjoying this series. And you know what's going to happen from the cover, but like seeing like Shadow as Batman and Sonic as the Flash and all of them, it's very ridiculous and exactly the way that you want it to be. And it's just a very good time.
Yeah, it is. It's really enjoyable. It's much more fun than I thought it was going to be. Like every time I read one of these, I'm like, okay. And it wins me over. It's a great collection of stories too. I love the Green Lantern one in here, but the Shadow versus Joker is just the best. And yeah, this is just great art, fun stories, just very smart combination here in such a good way that kind of honors both things. So yeah, impressive.
It does make me wonder if the next issue we're going to go over to the Sonic universe and find out that the Justice League became hedgehogs.
Like, oh man, I don't know if I could deal with that. That would kind of break my brain, I think.
Yeah. They're just like sort of, but regular hedgehogs. They're just sort of like
yeah, just regular hedgehogs
eating carrots and stuff. Cute. Anyway, The Ultimates number 12 from Marvel, written by Dennis Camp, art by Juan Fregeri. There was a big cliffhanger at the end of the last issue where the Ultimates found out that they may not have survived their showdown with the Hulk from an even earlier issue. And that's what we get the fallout from here. Turns out it is Doom, who is Reed Richards in this new Ultimate Universe, messed with the timeline a little bit to save them. And so over the course of this, the Ultimates have a meeting to try to figure out what this means and what to do next. Pete, you don't love meeting-based things.
My God, there's nothing like sitting in a meeting. You know what I mean? Because that's the nice thing about comics. It's like it can bring you into any room, and you're like, man, I hope we get some meetings. You know what I mean? Because if I'm going to read a comic, I just want to be in a room. You know what I mean? Talking. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what did you feel about this then? Was there anything you liked about it? Or were you like...
Well, I thought it was a kind of... You know, okay, this is the Ultimates, and the Ultimate is Doom's kind of a good guy. He's like, hey, listen, I didn't want to brag earlier, but man, saved all of you. No big deal, guys. Come on, let's just get back to this meeting. But real quick, I just wanted to say, I'm probably saved all of you guys. You know, no. So I don't know. Great art, but
I thought
last
there were some
meetings,
really-
please.
Well, I got to say, I sort of brought that up as a way of saying this was not a very dynamic issue. Like, there's good
conversation. Just talking about things. Show us instead of it being in a room and be like, that was crazy, huh? Hey, remember that? Remember when you saved us?
Yeah, I like the conversations here, and I do think the stuff with Doom and Tony in particular was really interesting and really good. The idea of the Ultimates being like, we died is great to work in there and really plays on each of them differently, as we see pays off in bad fashion by the end of the issue with a reveal of a traitor to the team. But I think there were maybe more dynamic ways of getting this across. You know, like, it's the sort of thing that you have them find out about this and then they all, you know, pair off in different action sequences to talk about it before coming back together. As is, it's very static. Like, it's almost the opposite of what we were talking about with the killer, where that stillness really plays into the story. Here, mm-hmm. It was literally just like She-Hulk is kind of just standing in the background of most of the scenes and not really moving at all. And I don't know, that's not why we read comics. So I don't want to put this down too much. This title is very good, but I do not think this was the strongest issue so far.
Whatever. Great art, though. You agree with that, though, right?
Juan Figueroa is a good artist. I wish this was more dynamic. Whatever Happened to the Crimson Justice, number one from Bad Cave Studios, written by Frank Thierry, art by Inaki Miranda. If you ever wondered what it would be like if Frank Thierry wrote Dark Knight Returns, here's the book. Here you go. And I don't say that dismissively. That's a fun thing.
Well, here's the thing about it. Because a lot of people say Dark Knight Returns is good, but there's not enough people getting jerked off in it. You know what I mean? So
That was one of my main criticisms.
Yeah, I remember
only
that. That's
the only
why I
person
it
getting jerked off in Dark Knight Returns is Frank Miller, am I right?
Oh, boy. Getting a little handy on the ride over. I think that this is... you know, other than the jerking off and then immediately wanting pancakes, which I think is a fun choice. I did like,
I don't know. I'm not going to ask that question.
That's exactly what happened. He was like, as soon as he finished, he was like, who wants pancakes?
Yeah. I was going to ask you a question as a follow-up about that from your own personal life. And I'm not going to ask that question.
Thank you. I'm You're glad welcome. To hear that. I appreciate that. Yeah, I did like the kind of stuff that we got after that, and this interesting kind of letter beyond the grave. You know,
yeah, and to be clear, that's because you don't like pancakes. Like, the very idea of them. You're a waffle.
I'm more
man.
Of a waffles guy.
Yeah, you're a leg man and a waffle man.
I love waffles. You know, chicken and waffles is great.
Oh my god!
You know what I mean? Any kind of waffles, tons of stuff you can throw on a waffle.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what, if you saw a sexy Eggo walking in on some sheep leg, ooh, man,
we'd have some problems. We'd have some real problems.
We sure would.
But the other stuff is fun.
Yeah, I like the world building in this. I know I'm being a little glib talking about Dark Knight Returns. That is really kind of what it is, and it's hard not to reference stories like that when you get here. But Frank Thierry knows how to write this sort of superhero universe. This is fun. The art from Inaki Miranda, we're going to talk about another Inaki Miranda book later on in the stack, is really solid as well. So if you're looking for a old superhero sucked back into the game book, this is what you're looking for. Yep. New Gods, number six from DC Comics.
New Gods.
New Gods, written by Rom V, art by Felipe Andrade and Evan Caicle. In this story, we're getting, well, every issue so far, we've been getting like a four-pager or so from a different artist as a prologue. This one is most of the issue is Felipe Andrade, who Rom V worked with previously on several titles. And this gets into some of their greatest hits, specifically like, what is the meaning of life and death in the DC universe? And that's what they delve into here. What does it mean for a new god to die? And gorgeously drawn, of course, by Felipe
Worth
Andrade.
It for the art alone. Oh my god, some of the panels, and I mean, amazing cover here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is just I mean, I'm a sucker for watercolor, but these panels, just the page layouts, the flow of it, it's just so artistic, so enjoyable. Oh my god, this is beautiful.
By the way, anything you want to say about the cover in particular?
It's cool looking.
Yeah. All right. I was kind of teeing you up because there actually is a shape around the title this time. It's a triangle, in case you weren't sure.
Yeah. I would have got that wrong.
Probably. This is a gorgeous book. I also think Felipe Andrade is doing a different art style than he has previously with Rom V on other titles.
Just really like it's impressive.
Way more exaggerated and ethereal. Really beautiful stuff. And then we get the Evan Cagle pages towards the end, which are great as well, as the new gods start to head towards Earth. This is really building in an interesting way story-wise, while it still tends to be very spiritual. Thunderbolts, Doomstrike, number 5 from Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Tommaso Bianchi. This is the final issue of this title, as Bucky teams up with Steve Rogers to try to take down Doom, except of course, he can't really, so he does the next best thing, which is burn him as hard as he possibly can. I know Justin's been a huge fan of one. How do you feel about it, Pete?
It's too bad he's hanging out with his mom instead of hanging out with us. Yeah, this is a blast. This is Thunderbolts just kicking butt. You get a Cap team up. This is just great stuff here. Tons of action, solid art. I enjoyed myself immensely on this one.
I think this is the best One World Under Doom book, and I'm including One World Under Doom in that. It's really good, and this is everything that I wanted out of an event like this, where Doom has taken over the world. This scrappy resistance who is in over their heads and cannot beat him is trying to fight back as best as they possibly can. I think this is probably the end of the books that Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing have done for Bucky, because next up we're getting New Thunderbolts by Sam Humphries, New Avengers, what they're calling it now. But this was a great run. They really got Bucky. They really pushed him forward. Good, good stuff. Bug Wars, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Mahmoud Asrar. This takes place in a backyard where a young kid has gone shrunk down and discovered there's all these warring clans of mites, little beings who live in the yard alongside bugs. And he's trying to get back home, but meanwhile, everybody wants the amulet that is embedded in his chest that was given to him by his dad. Another great issue of this title, I thought.
Don't forget about the Skullfuckers.
Yes, and the Skullfuckers. Was that the part that you enjoyed the most?
No, but I just laughed out loud because I was like, oh, Jason Aaron, you're having a good time here.
Sure is.
The kind of like nod, it almost felt like a little bit of a nod to like Sakaar and kind of Planet Hulk type stuff a little bit. But when they said Skullfucker, I was just like, oh my God, you guys are just ridiculous. But yeah, this is just fun, you know, just kind of over the top action of like, you know, if, you know, you were really shrunken down and had to fight your way back through your yard, through all the bugs and stuff, they probably wouldn't like you very much. So, yeah.
It's interesting. This still feels like it's in a building phase. And when we talk to Jason Aaron and Mahmoud Asrar about this, they really emphasize that they have big plans for this book for the long term. So this, I mean, we'll see where we end up by issue 6, but this almost feels like a prologue to the whole thing, if anything. I really like the world building. Mahmoud Asrar's characters are drawn gorgeously throughout here, and the action is gross and intense. But yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see where this all goes next.
Alex, real quick, which do you think would be a better way to die? Like the praying mantis getting your head ripped off or the butt flamethrower?
With the praying mantis, they usually bite your head off after you mate with them, right?
Yeah, so you get to one last time, I guess. Yeah, that's right. Your answer.
With a praying mantis, I mean, how many people can say that, you know?
But the butt flamethrower was brutal.
You know that was brutal, and I would not like that. The praying mantis, if we're just talking about pure death, like the praying mantis would be quicker because it would just bite my head off.
Right.
And there's probably still 10 seconds where I'd be like, whoa, I'm in a praying mantis mouth, and then I die. Yeah. Your head, if it gets separated quickly, you survive for a little bit.
Yeah, anyways, the butt death was pretty brutal.
Yeah, I would hate to die by any butt, honestly.
Zatanna die by butt is, that's a bad. Tough way. Yeah,
do you know they're pushing to bring that back in New York?
Death by butt?
Death by butt.
Wow.
Yeah, they're going to fart on you to death. It's awful.
That's a tough way to go.
Governor Hochul is going to do it, too. And I'm like, Kathy, please.
Oh, my God.
What are we talking about? Zatanna number 4 from DC Comics by Jamal Campbell. In this issue, Zatanna is finally fighting back against the sources, the evil beings who have put a sword through her and attacked her and attacked her friends.
It's magical sword.
Yes. To be clear, it's a magical sword that is there. Gorgeous looking book.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable. The art is just so epic. The really cool panels. Also, this kind of like glowing, like golden vein kind of thing is also very cool. Yeah, love the action. Fun last panel with the kind of words backwards and all that. That was great. That's such a cool way to showcase that, I thought. But yeah, artistically, this is very artistic forward, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I think the story is a little hard to hold onto here. It's spiraled in some directions that I'm not quite sure what's going on at all.
But it might save it. You know what I mean? It's not like it's too wonky to
for sure. Yes, and it started in a very strong place. So as long as we end simply, I think it's going to be okay. Fantastic Four number 32 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Corey Smith. In the last issue, the Fantastic Four completely changed history, essentially erasing themselves. But as we find out in this issue, Valeria's brain, she managed to send a little bit of her brain back in time and got into a new body in this new reality. She's not the only one. Also, as we find out in this alternate history, another really great done, not actually done in one, but like singular issue of this title that gets to some really emotional places with the Valeria and Franklin relationship in particular. I know I'm very focused on emotions this week, but I like feeling things, man, you know?
Yeah. Is this the one where it was like those panels where it was like people's brains were outside of their head? Was that this
issue? That's Star Trek. We're going to be talking about that.
That's in the lore war. My bad. But when you were talking about brains, I was like, oh, my God. It made me think of that panel. And I was like, it's this, but that's not it. Okay. So erase all that. Apologies. Yeah, I thought this was a weird but kind of interesting choice here where we have Franklin as Galactus and, you know, his sister's trying to save him. You know, sometimes when you can't save somebody, you got to send your brain back in time and hopefully that saves the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this title continues to be really cleverly done. Every issue that leaves us in a place with a big mystery I'm really curious to hear about for the next issue. This is great. Blade Forager number 3 for Mad Cave Studios, written by Naki Miranda and Roy Miranda. Art by Naki Miranda. This takes place in another world where everybody is blade forgers, and whoever fights the hardest in a gladiatorial-style battle becomes emperor of the entire land. In this issue, big twist, the old emperor kills himself so he can hand the empire over to his daughter. Great art throughout, still really intrigued by this world, but this is the issue where I'm like, you guys got to slow down a little bit. Because I love the first issue of this, but they definitely sped through story there leading to this surprise about the daughter. The second issue delved more into the relationship while adding a ton more information about Blade Forgers and how that worked. And we thought it was really well balanced, I think, pretty much across the board in the podcast. This third issue is like, this is too much. They're just like on a car that's heading down a hill with more and more information and more plot zooming forward in time. And I'm like, slow down. We had this great setup with the father-daughter relationship, and we're past that now in issue 3. So, I don't know. They haven't lost me or anything, but I definitely, I don't know. I'm not quite sure where this is going from this point.
I hear you. I this is a cool cover. I love the action in this. Fun twists and turns. Fun villain reveal at the end as well. But I do agree with you. I'd like to be able to catch my breath and kind of soak in what's happening a little bit.
Yeah. Out of Alcatraz, number 3 from OD Press, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Tyler Crook. We are following 3 convicts who escaped from Alcatraz. This is an apocryphal event that happened in real life that Christopher Cantwell is exploring as if it was real. And what we're getting over the course of this series, to the point that somebody literally says it in this issue, is everybody is in their own prisons and trying to escape from them, whether that is an actual prison, Alcatraz, whether it's, your rage, whether it's racism, sexism, homophobia, anything like that. And that, to me, is a really interesting theme to explore. And the book keeps hitting it over and over and over in different ways, much to its credit.
Yeah, and really cool cover here. Love all the twists and turns. Yeah, more than a prison break going on here. Just amazing art. Love the look of this. Really kind of keeps you on your toes, which is impressive.
Gorgeous art from Tyler Crook that often feels like it comes out of like an old newsreel, or it'd be a cover for a vintage edition of Grapes of Wrath or something like that. Really, really good stuff. Do not miss this book. Daredevil Unleash Hell, Red Band number 5 for Marvel, written by Erica Schultz, art by Valentina Pinti and Sergio De Villa.
Yeah, Erica.
Elektra is in hell trying to rescue Morgan, the woman who was corrupted by Muse and is now going to be killed by Muse. Ghost Rider is also there fighting a devilish version of Daredevil. And there's also the bad side of Elektra called Hellektra is in hell as well. Even with all of that going on, I think this was a really nicely done story that, as usual from Erica Schultz, dug in on Elektra and everything that makes her interesting. I don't know if there's more series coming after this, but if not, Erica Schultz's run on the character has been really defining and very impressive to see.
Yeah, it's been a legendary run. I love this. I don't want it to go back to regular Daredevil. I love Elektra Daredevil. So great. Another great issue of this. We get to spend some time in Elektra's head, which is great. And I know JT Sizz, if he was here, he would also appreciate.
Oh, yeah.
RIP to that guy. A great art. Love the action.
Could you imagine that if we casually dropped that Justin died in the middle of a Daredevil Unleash Hell review and then just kept going?
Yep. I mean, I hope that's how you guys do it for me.
Oh, totally. Barely recognize you at all.
Just barely mention him. Just a casual, like, you know, this is an epic run of Daredevil. Also, Pete died. And I hope that Erica Schultz keeps continuing to work on this because she's doing amazing work.
Yeah. For anybody wondering, Justin's fine. He's with his mom, as I believe we previously established on this episode.
Yep.
Anyway, from the world of minor threats, welcome to Twilight number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Gail Simone, art by Gene Ha. This is an anthology title that comes from the world of minor threats, which has a bunch of low-tier supervillains and superheroes. Here we're focusing on Crab Louie, a character who is made up of a bunch of lobsters who... Wait, is it Crab Louie or is it Lobster Louie?
I don't know. It's one of them, man.
Oh, boy. Well, he's made of lobsters, so I'd imagine Lobster Louie. But I really thought he was Crab Louie. Anyway, he is at a convention for heroes and villains, and there's a bunch of also-rans there when they are attacked by a bunch of terrorists and have to team together to stop them. Another really good issue of this. Gail Simone does a great job of just diving into the psyche of somebody who is on the con circuit. I wonder how she knows about that or has any reference. And there are Easter eggs aplenty here.
Crab Louie.
Crab Louie. There we go. Why do you have lobsters then? I have questions. Anyway, great character, very sad character who showed up in a previous miniseries. So it's great to see him again. There's even a reference to the Gail Simone is a bear meme that she pushes on social media. So lots of in-jokes, and it is packed with comic book jokes and minor threats jokes and other things. So very fun issue that still manages to be sweet and sad at the same time.
Yeah, pokes fun about Artist Alley. Shardest Alley. Oh, come on. Oof. Yeah. But, yeah, this is fun. A little inside baseball at times, but also very great. But hilarious. Well done. Amazing team on this. A bunch of legends. So this is fun. This is a blast.
Red Coat, number 12 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Brian Hitch. In this issue, we're continuing the introduction of the Northerner, a time traveler who wants to make sure the timeline continues the right way, and he needs our Red Coat, Simon Pure, to help him along with that. I continue to really like this book. I don't think this is quite as strong as the one-shots with, say, Johnny Appleseed or Albert Einstein or anything like that, because we're spending a lot of real estate setting up the greater unnamed universe. But you still got some Brian Hitch art, which is great, and yeah. Jeff Johns knows how to set up these sort of time-travel-y events, and there's some really cool action sequences in this issue as well.
Yeah, this continues to be a blast. I agree with you. I think it's very interesting, the twists and turns that happen here, and also, like, spoilers, but the, I don't know why it was so enjoyable to see somebody, you know, eating a Snickers that shouldn't be eating a Snickers, but that was just such a fun...
Because that's you on a daily basis, right?
I wish. Oh, man, that would be great. Snickers a day? Oh, come on.
How many are you at? How many does your doctor allow?
I'm legally not allowed to talk about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thanks, anyway.
You got to go to my doctor, Dr. Candy. He prescribes you two Snickers, takes two Snickers, call him in the morning.
Oh, wow. That's the best.
Yeah, if you can. Yeah. If you survive the experience. Oh, God. Snickers, they're very filling. Anyway, Superior Avengers. That was the most old man thing I've ever said. Superior Avengers number 2 from Marvel. Oh, the Snickers.
I'm so full. Oof. I couldn't have another one. Okay, all right.
Please.
All right.
Not a Snickers, please. Superior Avengers number 2 for Marvel, written by Steve Fox, art by Luca Maresca and Kyle Hotz. We are following a bunch of characters who come from the future, from a world where Doom has taken over. The world thinks they are heroes who love Doom, but they're actually villains who hate Doom and are trying to take him down. That's sort of the Thunderbolts twist going on here. There's a couple of more relationship-y twists by the end of the issue. I think we were all pretty positive about the first issue of this. How do you think it held up in issue number 2?
Well, this was fun. It was great to see kind of Killmonger kicking some ass here, but and maybe get some ass at the end of it there.
Hubba.
And then the ghost likes to
and
watch.
You're an ass man as well, right? You like the sheep's legs, you like a waffle, and you love asses.
All right, this is getting weird. But it was kind of funny how they put the
ghost. I'm trying to build you a Frankenstein girlfriend, to ruin the surprise. I'm online with one of the help guys from Real Doll, and so far they're like, please log off. Please, sir, get off of the chat. We cannot make that for you.
Oh, man.
I'm like, no, our body's a waffle. This all makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, why couldn't they make that? Anyways, the fun kind of reveal at the end here is we got two characters knocking boots, and the ghost is just kind of peeking through the wall like the ghost does, and it's like, hoo-hoo-hoo, interesting. So, yeah.
I wish a little more was going on here. I felt like after that initial twist or double twist of the first issue, we didn't really get much more happening other than them explaining the big machine that they're building in the negative zone. There's a fun fight with, I don't know, the Alchemist. I don't remember what his name is. I don't know what I'm blanking on. It doesn't matter. Fantastic Four villain. Anyway... The thing that I was struck by with this issue is it takes place between the pages of One World Under Doom number 3, I believe, or whichever issue just came out, where Avengers and all the rest of the characters disappeared. And it made me feel like, this is maybe not this particular comic's fault, but it made me feel like I wish that was the idea of this book. Like, that was the original Thunderbolts idea, was the Avengers and Fantastic Four disappeared and the Thunderbolts came in their wake. Maybe that was where we started with this book. Like, I would have loved if this book existed in that pocket where, like, oops, all the heroes were gone. Here come the superior Avengers, like the Thunderbolts. Instead, in One World Under Doom number, I think it was actually 4, if I remember correctly, all the heroes have already disappeared by the time the issue starts. And they're back by the time the issue ends. Huh. So that's, like, not enough real estate for that. But anyway... It is what it is. Let's talk about Star Trek Defiant, number 27 for IDW.
War!
Written by Christopher Cantwell, art by David Tinto, a.k.a. the brain issue that Pete was mentioning before.
Yes.
In this issue, more and more characters are starting to realize the universe is not what it is meant to be, and lore has screwed with things. There is also, big spoiler here, a great moment, I thought, in this issue, where it becomes clear that Data is not quite as brainwashed by lore as we thought he was. which is awesome. And you start to get that, like, the tide is turning, the heroes are starting to get it back thing that, yeah, it makes you pump your fist. It feels really good.
Gets excited.
Yeah. And I know you're not the biggest Star Trek guy, Pete, but you feeling any of that in this issue, or were you just upset about the brains?
I am. I have been. I thought the Lower War has been great. I thought, first off, badass cover here. But yeah, I've been enjoying the twists and turns that are kind of happening in this. So yeah, this is winning me over here.
Yeah, this is a really good time. And it also tees up an issue, a one-shot called Shax's Worst Day, which is a semi-sequel to Shax's Best Day, a one-shot that I was either nominated for or won an Eisner by Ryan North during the Blood event. What was it? Not Caverns of Blood. Day of Blood event. And that was the one where Shax was like, I got to kill everybody. This is great. So we'll see what happens with that.
Books. Yeah, and also the panel on this where people's brains were outside of their head was really
pretty
epic.
Very nice.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's great because the last issue ended with Scotty's brain was outside of his head. And you're like, oh my God, this is terrible. And then this issue is like, he's not the only one. That's pretty great. Really, really enjoying this. The Amazing Spider-Man, number 4 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Pepe Larraz. In this issue, Spider-Man starts to get it back after this poison has been infecting him and making him hallucinate. We get some really lovely scenes in here with Aunt May back in the day that I thought were really beautiful. This has been, I know we're only 4 issues in, but this has been a really good run on Spider-Man so far.
Yeah, amazing art. Love the kind of black and white flashback stuff. Really powerful, very cool. The Itsy Bitsy is also fun. There's some fun stuff with that character here.
She's got a predator mouth, Pete.
Yeah.
She tried to kiss Pete the last, not you, Pete, but the other Pete.
Yeah.
Last issue. And this issue, it turns out she has got a predator mouth. Gross. Would you kiss a predator?
Oh, yeah. No question.
Oh, wow. All right.
Hold on, I got to tell
the real doll guys about that.
Please adjust.
Oh, weird. They said that they can do that one.
Yeah, of course they've done that before. Yeah. The rubbing it in of the you've lost the love of your life twice. Ouch.
Oof.
Just bringing that back. That'll open that old wound. This is very interesting. Great writing and amazing art. So, and nothing about the new girlfriend in this issue. So hell yeah.
You Never Heard of Me, number 4 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Yolanda Zanfardino, art by Elisa Romboli. This is about a kid who has the power to see possible futures. Yeah. In this issue, he's using that power to try to help his friend's older sister get a girlfriend by constantly changing their fates. Surprising use for that. After issues where I thought this was building up to something where it was like really deadly or worth earth shaking, it's very interesting that it turns instead to be like, nope, we're gonna make this about relationships.
Yeah, just all about the ships, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The life and death of a relationship. So fun. That's what I would be using this power for.
I'm surprised about the arc of this because it started very like intense and emotional, and now it's just like, ooh, we're really trying to get these people together. I believe
that's also tense and emotional, Alex.
Not at the same level as like somebody might die.
A relationship might die.
Oh yeah, that's fair. I'm curious to see what happens in the next issue, which is the final issue. We'll have a better sense of like the arc of this book. I love visually the way they depict this.
Yeah, I've said that before. It's very
cool. So interesting book.
Great
and
art,
last but not least, Exceptional X-Men number 9 from Marvel, written by Ave L. Ewing, art by Carmen Conero. In this issue, one of the Exceptional X-Men students has been captured by Mr. Sinister, and the rest of the team finds out and goes after him. If you've been missing action on this title, which personally I have not at all, but if you have, which has been a criticism that some people have levied, You get that in this issue as the team all goes for Mr. Sinister. There's some twists and turns with fake Iceman and Iceman fighting the fake Iceman. There's a great moment, I thought, where Kitty figures it out immediately, where they're like, oh, this guy, Xenon Sheldon, or whatever his name is hanging out with him. That's where we last saw him. And Kitty's like, Xenon Sheldon, XS, Nathaniel XS, oh, God damn it, it's Mr. Sinister, which I thought was a really funny sequence of events, which is like, of course she'd figure it out immediately. And of course she'd be like, that jerk. So great. I love this title. I love the action. I love the character. There's a great cliffhanger here. Pete, I know you're not as high on it, but what'd you think about this issue?
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, for you, if Katie Pride's having a great time, you're having a great time. So
sure.
Yeah, this is okay, but I did appreciate the action boost. And, you know, Emma takes down Mr. Sinister, and we'll see if she's okay. You know what I mean? Afterwards, it was a little tough.
We'll see what happens. And, folks,
join us next time.
Join us next time for the next exciting
episode.
See
what happens.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Thank you.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.